Hello, welcome to the Psychology of Attractiveness podcast. I'm Rob Burris. In this month's episode, we find out why a game show host's chiseled jawline can make his contestants smarter. We unveil the exact number of daily portions of fruit and veg that are required to boost beauty and discover why counting money makes men more choosy. This is the March edition of the Psychology of Attractiveness podcast from oraclelab.co.uk. Anyone who hasn't been living under a rock for the past decade will have heard the advice that we should all eat at least 5 portions of fruit and veg every day. Most of us don't meet this requirement, possibly because we think the main reason for eating our greens is so we'll be healthier when we're old, and no one ever believes that they're going to be the one who gets old. Until they wake up one day and their knees don't work. What we need is a means of convincing younger people to consume cabbage and guzzle grapefruit, and one way to do that is to hit them where it hurts. In their faces. In their beautiful, young faces. Okay, I'm not advocating violence. What I'm doing is letting you know about a new piece of research that was out this month that's linked fruit consumption to properties of skin pigmentation in the face that are known to influence attractiveness. Ross Whitehead and his colleagues from the University of St Andrews recruited 60 students for a 6-week study of diet and appearance. At the start of the study, these students reported consuming an average of 3.5 portions of fruit and veg per day. Those amongst you who are currently students or have been students before probably think 3.5 portions of fruit and veg a day is a bit optimistic for students, but I suppose even your most sybaritic of students has to supplement his lager intake with the odd apple every now and again. 3.5 portions is probably fairly representative of most of the population. Over the course of the 6-week study, fruit and vegetable consumption amongst these students varied, and it was possible for the researchers to determine the effects of this varying diet on appearance, using a device called a spectrophotometer, which, when placed on the skin, gives an accurate measure of skin colour. The researchers saw that as the study participants ate more fruit and veg, their skin began to reflect light similarly to the way that it's reflected by carotenoids, which belong to the class of pigment chemicals found most commonly in orange and red fruits and vegetables, like carrots, melons, and pumpkins. So it seems likely that these pigments make their way from our dinner plates to our faces, giving us a nice carroty glow. Okay, that might not sound too appetizing. Not many of us would want to look like a carrot. But in a follow-up study, Whitehead was able to show that changes in skin tone associated with eating more fruits and vegetables do make our faces appear healthier and more attractive. And it seems the effect is noticeable even after very modest increases in intake. To appear noticeably healthier, we need to eat only an extra 2.9 portions of fruit and veg every day. Admittedly, that is on top of the 3 portions we're probably eating already. But it only amounts to an additional 230 grams or 8 ounces of fruit and veg. To appear noticeably more attractive rather than just healthier, you'll need to put away slightly more than that, but not by much. Increasing your intake by 3.3 portions per day, around 260 grams or 9.5 ounces, is enough for a natural and noticeable boost in beauty without having to resort to Botox. I think if I was given the choice between a banana and a syringe full of botulin toxin, I know which one I'd go for. If you'd like to discover more about why having skin with an orangey-yellow tint is attractive, dig into the podcast archives and listen to an interview with Ian Stephen in the episode from February 2011. Head to oraclelab.co.uk and follow the links. Don't worry, I'll still be here when you get back. I'll find something to keep me occupied, I suppose. I feel prettier already. One of the most consistent findings of research into human mating behaviour is that women find men with money attractive. Some of us might wish this wasn't the case, either for reasons of sexual equality or simply because, like me, you're a man whose bank balance is only marginally larger than his Y chromosome. The reason for this preference seems pretty clear. Our female ancestors were able to bear more offspring if they could attract the investment of a husband with resources to share. At first, this meant a man with good hunting skills who could quite literally bring home the bacon. After the advent of agriculture, an ideal husband was one with a knack for husbandry. Nowadays, our wealth is represented neither by our adeptness at archery nor by the acreage of our farmstead, but by the number of zeros in our bank balance. But the end result is much the same. More resources means more attention from the ladies. And men seem to know it too. If we're richer, we're more demanding of an attractive mate, and, rather pathetically, we're more generous and give more money to charity if we know we're being observed by a woman. Jose Young and Norm Lee of the Singapore Management University recently published a rather novel study on the topic of wealth and attractiveness. They had men and women carry out a series of simple calculations using a stack of banknotes. One third of the participants were given a pile of two Singapore dollar bills. Another third were given $50 bills, and the remaining third handled blank pieces of paper of identical dimensions to the banknotes. Afterwards, the research participants completed a mating standards survey, answering questions about the minimum requirements they had for a partner's physical attractiveness and quality of personality. Young saw that men's standards for a partner were lowest when they'd handled the valueless blank pieces of paper or the $2 bills. But when they'd handled the $50 banknotes, equivalent in value to around 2,000 US dollars or 1,300 British pounds, their standards were higher by about 10%. And remember, these men weren't actually any richer. They didn't get to keep the $50 bills, only handle them. And still, they were seemingly convinced that they'd become 10% more alluring. Women were less easily manipulated. Their standards weren't influenced by their having riffled through a wad of cash. But women perhaps shouldn't feel too smug about this. Men are no more attracted to wealthy women than they are to poor women. It wouldn't be sensible for a woman who perceives herself to be rich to up her standards, because a fat wallet isn't likely to increase her chances of attracting a partner. You know who I feel sorry for in all of this? Those guys who work behind the counter in the bank, ugly as a boot, but because they handle thousands of pounds of cash every day of their working lives, genuinely believe they've got a chance with Katy Perry. Those poor deluded fools. The TV talent show The Voice has recently arrived on British screens after a successful run in the US. The concept behind The Voice is that the judges sit with their backs to the contestants and are therefore unable to base their appraisals on a singer's appearance. Which all sounds very fair. But one idea that seems not to have occurred to the producers of the show is that if your aim is to level the playing field, concealing the judges from the contestants might be just as important. That's because new research published this month suggests that women's performance in a game show-style competition is partially dictated by how they perceive the host. Heather Flo and colleagues from the University of Leicester in the UK told over 100 female research participants that TV producers were developing a new quiz show and that their assistance was being sought to help the producers select the show's host. The women were split into two groups. Women in these two groups were given a resume to read and were told that it had been written by a male applicant for the hosting spot. The women in the two groups received resumes that were identical, except that one described the host in masculine terms, stating his interests included rugby and weightlifting, while the other resume described the host's more feminine hobbies, like playing the flute and designing clothes. In reality, both of these resumes were fake, and their only function was to prime the women to perceive the host as typically masculine or typically feminine. Next, the women watched video clips of the prospective host. There weren't two hosts, all the women saw videos of the same man. The host asked general knowledge questions, and women had to answer as quickly as possible, just like in a real game show situation. Analysis of the women's responses to the question showed that when the host was portrayed as masculine, women responded faster to his questions. However, this wasn't true of every woman. Only those women who were in the fertile phase of their menstrual cycle were faster to the buzzer in response to queries from the supposedly macho host. Now, loyal listeners to the podcast will know that women are more attracted to masculine, bad boy types around the time of ovulation, which is about 14 days before their period starts. The presence of a masculine host, combined with a hormonal state that promotes interest in masculine men, seems to result in women being quicker to the draw. Feminine hosts had no effect on women's response times, and women who were in the non-fertile phase of their cycles performed just as well, regardless of the host's masculinity. You may be asking, what's the point of a study like this? After all, it's not every day a woman finds herself a contestant on a game show. But of course, there's no reason to assume that this pattern of behaviour is confined to the television studio. Presumably, women's behavioural engagement and social interest in masculine men varies in much the same way in the bar or the club. Another interesting aspect of this study is that the host was always the same guy, played by the same actor. He didn't vary in masculinity at all. It was all down to the resumes the women had read. The women responded to the hosts, who said they liked masculine activities, as if they really were masculine. And they responded to purportedly feminine men as if their love of needlework was genuine. Which means that there may be hope for me and my fellow skinny weaklings. We may have arms like spaghetti, but if we act tough, maybe we can still get the girl. Anyway, if you'll excuse me, I'm off to drive a very fast car and then lift some heavy weights made from steel. Because I'm a man. And apparently Jeremy Clarkson. This is why Jeremy Clarkson's so successful. He's got a haircut like a blackbird's nest and a face like an elephant's elbow. And yet, the ladies love him. I don't know, maybe they don't. You just perceive him as being like the alpha male, the brown leather jacketed alpha male of the BBC. That's all for this episode. If you'd like to find more about the research featured in today's show, head over to www.oraclelab.co.uk and click on podcasts. You can also keep up with new research throughout the month by following Oracle Lab on Twitter. Until next time, thanks for listening to the Psychology of Attractiveness podcast. I'm Rob Burris.